Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm in the studio with Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, everybody.
And on the phone with us, Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Hi, Natalie.
Jim, so good to have you with us. Dan, always look forward to time together. Wondering if both of you had a chance to watch President Trump's speech on the border wall.
I did. Jim?
Yeah, unfortunately, I did.
And then just to be fair, did both of you watch the response from Senator Schumer and Congresswoman Pelosi?
Yes. Of course.
You mean the village people?
Yeah. So let's just break it down just a little bit. And Jim, I'll come to you first to just do this. But I raced home so I could see this. This is clearly not the president's natural format. And it was a very short speech, 8 minutes or so. But he got unpresidential from my standpoint, even if you agree with him on you want to build the wall. But he said some mean things about people south of the border. And that's where I thought, Jim, I'd just allow you to comment and give your thoughts.
Well, it was I'm deeply disappointed in the media for giving all of these people this opportunity to say nothing new and to just take the same old political positions and interrupt prime time during a kind of a sacred moment when we interrupt broadcasting for this message from the Oval Office. It was a poop show. It was embarrassing. I thought we found out, as you mentioned, Natalie, that the president is completely not comfortable in the Oval Office, like he is with his 20,000 hysterical fringe people. And I thought that the one good thing out of it is we know now how Pelosi and Schumer would look if they were going to Madame Tussauds. I mean, the whole thing was a black mark against America, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, I mean, the American Gothic pitchfork photographs of Schumer and Pelosi have been, as our producer said, creepy. But Dan,
creepy because it's accurate.
Yeah, it is true. There is that. Dan, I just want to ask you, what I find most offensive is that he's characterizing the situation at the border as a crisis. Okay, so I was jotting down what I think is a crisis. I think the national debt is a crisis right now. I think the opioid problem is a crisis. I think incivility in Washington, you know, is a crisis. And you know, when I think of what's happening at the border, by all these statistical measures, it's pretty quiet compared to what it's been at times.
Yeah.
I think you need border patrol and more money and resources there. But this has become a symbol for this president of anti-immigrant and appealing to his base. At least that's how I read it. And I would love, love, love to separate his feelings about immigration from shutting down this government. Dan?
Okay. Before I answer that, because I think that's a fair question, I just think back to 2013. Right. 2013, Congress organizes the Gang of Eight. It's a bipartisan committee, and their whole venture is to solve illegal immigration. It's meant to, you know, expedite citizenship. Mm-hmm. It's meant to go through all those things and solve some problems. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. It was a problem then. It is still a problem today. Crisis. I don't know. It always depends.
It is a problem. I give you that.
It always depends on how you define the crisis.
But did it rise to a presidential address that—
Well, when you're the president,
in the environment of a shutdown, where it just, you know, doubled down, and it I don't think it helped bring compromise.
Well, I think you look at the immigration efforts that have been made over the last 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. And I would call them paltry at best. Mm-hmm. I would say the Republican Party has been negligent on immigration when they held both sides of the House. They really should have when they held all three, the Senate, the House, and the presidency, they should have put together a Republican solution on immigration and passed that thing.
Yeah, Jim, coming.
We
to,
didn't.
Yeah, Jim, coming to you on the Democratic response. So you know, it's no secret that I don't enjoy this president. But then when I saw the Democratic response, I wasn't too happy either. So I'm in kind of a nowhere land, Jim.
Look, I'm frustrated. I'm upset. And I think I'm speechless, which doesn't happen all that often. What the hell wrong.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with these politicians? They have both determined that it is in their best political interest to not yield. Trump dare not upset that fringe base of his. It doesn't matter if it's 30%. And Pelosi figures she's got the president right where he needs to be because it looks like he's taken the beating in the polls on the shutdown. And where the hell do they care about the country? I mean, this is a serious thing. I'm over it.
So meanwhile, we have, you know, programs on about to run out of money, whether it's food stamps, you know, whether it's school lunch programs. I've spent time at the national parks over the holidays. I worry about what happens at our national parks. Let's just ask this, and I'll go to Dan first. Dan, what will bring an end to this impasse?
Okay. Perfect world? Can I say what that is?
Be idealistic.
If I'm going to be perfectly idealistic, everybody takes and puts on their adult pants for a few days, and they pound out an immigration solution. And if we need to, let's put the government back to work for a week. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So everybody's back to work, so we have people that aren't out there starving, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not afraid of making their house payment, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So we've taken care of 700,000, 800,000 people. They now have work, and they can solve some of those problems. They'll get a bunch of back pay for what it was.
Well, and luckily, we go help the private sector that also depends on those jobs.
Right.
Right.
So
contractors,
okay. Put everybody
cities
together
that
for
are
a
federally
week.
Dependent.
Put everybody together for a week and say, hey, if I'm Trump, I would say, okay, give me a week-by-week funding of the government. Mm-hmm. And we're going to spend this week, and we're going to solve this problem.
The week by week, but give me a deadline.
I know, it's painful.
Yeah, painful.
But we all know politics responds to crises, and crises beget deadlines.
Yeah. Jim, how would you see an end to the impasse?
I would sit down with Dan. I would say, look, $5 billion in the scheme of things doesn't matter. It's less than 0.1% of the federal budget. This isn't about that. You take your stupid $5 billion, and you build this small percentage of this $25 or $30 billion wall, which I think is useless. I think we might as well throw this out of airplanes, this cash, but nonetheless, that's what you want. Fine. What do I want? I want 700,000 DACA kids safe and secure on a path to citizenship immediately. I get what I want, you get something that you want, and we all can claim victory, and then let's move on and get things done. But I just, until there is a clear political loser here, we're going to be playing this game.
So my favorite statement has been said, it's not mine, it's not original, but I've heard it from others, and I don't know who to attribute it to. I think we need this wall, Jim. But I think we need to invest in gates so that at the end of the day, there are opportunities for people to get here and do the work, and we lower the transactional costs of people crossing the border.
Yeah. Let's take just the last couple of minutes of this segment and talk about the Utah congressional delegation reaction. I think it was predictable in many ways, but Senator Lee's turning some heads. He seems to suddenly be out there a lot. Dan, I'll go to you first, because on his Facebook page and on things that he's doing, he is – I would say moving closer to the president.
Well, no one.
At a time when I feel like Utah is moving farther away.
Potentially. I will say that if you look at how Orrin Hatch was effective for the last 2 years, and I would argue he might have been his most effective self in the last 2 years. But Orrin Hatch has been effective over the last 2 years, and it was by being close to the president. Now that that, quote, awning is away from Senator Lee, he recognizes Utah has really benefited from President Trump's presidency. You may not, we don't love his rhetoric. We don't love the way, you know, there are a lot of things we don't love.
Yeah.
That said, Utah has really personally benefited from its relation, from Orrin Hatch's relationship with Donald Trump. And I think Mike Lee.
And Romney's not going to be that guy.
I say, and we see that Mike Lee recognizes Romney's not going to be that guy. So Utah is going to get left out in the cold if he doesn't.
Yeah. Jim, what do you see in the congressional delegation reaction? And I'll just plant a seed for you. And Ben McAdams' commitment to have a lot of town halls.
I think that St. Mike Lee that Dan paints, I don't see that at all. I see this as one conniving, maneuvering political animal who more than anything wants to be on the Supreme Court. And I think he sees his shot. I think he knows that Trump is as loony as the rest of us do. And I think it's a disgusting, despicable display of raw political power that Mike Lee is willing to throw Utah and principles and everything else under the bus so he can get what he wants. That's what I see.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Jim DeBacchus on the left and Senator Dan McKay on the right. In our next segment, we'll talk about local politics. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We've been talking about the border wall, President Trump's speech, the Utah congressional delegation reaction. I didn't get a chance in the first segment to tell you what I thought about the Utah congressional delegation reaction, but I have been wanting to see them join with other like states and make pacts to get this government back open, at least, you know, fund money to our national parks, start doing, have an offense. Something other than just coming back home, not being in session, complaining, saying
now,
a small state like Utah can't do anything.
Right now, the House is there. I think you've seen enough support fall apart. The Senate, on the other hand,
where we got to see something,
is the problem. Is, you know, for those who aren't that familiar, nothing will come to the Senate floor without the majority leader's permission. And McConnell is lockstep with Trump. I mean, he is. For good, bad, or indifferent, he is on the president's team.
Yeah. Well, so we learned over the last week that former Congresswoman Mia Love has joined CNN. Jim, I'll go to you first. She's accepted a 2-year contract as a political commentator. I think that's a great fit for Mia.
I'm so happy for her. I mean, look, why would I want anything not good for her? I hope she gets on there. I hope she's a superstar. And won't it be nice to see Mia Love with actual opinions that she's actually talking about and issues? I mean, this woman that got into Congress and Representative Utah and refused to address voters in a serious way the whole time when she had guys like Dave Hansen kind of pulling her strings and raising her money. Good. I'm happy. Let's hear from you, Mia. Let's see what you've been believing all these years. I'm waiting to go.
When I have seen her speak on issues that she's familiar with, she does a really nice job, and I think this will be a great fit for her, and I think she's earned it. Dan, your comments on Mia's Love's new position.
Congratulations. She told us when she, you know, at her concession speech, she told us we haven't heard the last of her, and here we are, right?
Something interesting, I think. So if you think of Congressman Stewart, mm-hmm. and Congressman Curtis, Congressman Bishop, I don't see any of those three having the opportunity to be on a national network.
You
position.
Didn't say John Curtis.
Well, and then I'm thinking him too, and then I could go the. But
I was going to say I would throw John Curtis.
You think
in
he
that
could?
He could get in. See,
I
walked away
from it. My
point
was just who would think that these Utah politicians would land these national gigs?
That's what I was going to say.
And I don't think the other ones probably would.
Well, I think it's a shout out to CNN a little bit. In my opinion, I think Utah's voice is a good bellwether voice for where the Republican Party and where conservatism is. And I think they've found good, respectful people who can go and be on air and not embarrass the network.
Yeah. Jim, any comment on that from you?
Well, Jason Chaffetz has been on and done nothing but embarrass Utah time after time after time. So we can't go anywhere but uphill with me on.
So because we brought up Jason Chaffetz, let's turn to national politics and rumors and things. So I was at the Capitol this week. A good friend retired from the governor's office. She had served for 4 Utah governors, Fran Stoltz. A lot of people were there from the executive branch. It was a wonderful fraternity of people because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a special opportunity to serve in those roles. And you always have a connection with others who serve in them. But lo and behold, Jason Chaffetz was in the Gold Room and had his wife in tow. He, of course, served as, chief of staff for Governor Huntsman.
Yep, that's right.
I don't know. It didn't seem like it was for very long, but I noticed his presence, Dan.
Yeah.
But could we get this straight, though? I mean, he was there for a week or two, and it didn't last long. I don't think those guys like each other
He was 6 to 8 months, wasn't he?
Well, this is why it surprised me that, knowing that he has residence in D.C., at least he's spending a lot of time there, that he was here for this.
Well, yes. I will just say this. Fran, who works in the governor's office, is a transcendent figure, regardless of what party, regardless of who you are.
She's they call her Warden
lady.
Warden Stoltz.
Yep, and she is
keeps
good
track of the governor.
At what she does.
Yeah.
And I will just say, so it doesn't surprise me to see faces show up from the past to acknowledge Fran's contribution to the state of Utah.
I thought it might be that he wanted to touch some flesh while he's here.
Well, there's always a side benefit, right? It's there's always something else in it. But, I mean, it highlights, you know, Natalie brings it up, but I'm just going to put it out there. We're hearing a lot of people start to, Jim, we talked about this where the governor's field was going to be very crowded. And it's going to get more crowded.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, we made a long list, you know, Spencer Cox, Greg Hughes,
Sean Reyes, Thomas Wright.
There was a bunch
yada, yada.
Of, we went through this whole list. And,
Greg Hughes.
And, yeah. We went through this whole list and everybody says, yeah, but I don't hear any women. And this last week, you're starting to hear a couple of ladies' names being mentioned as being viable candidates potentially for governor who are very qualified. Natalie, do you remember those two people who they were?
Well, we have Amy Winder Newton.
Yeah, that's one.
And she's one that's been on my list.
Yeah, and a major political news article brought up another one. Do you remember who the other one was?
I have no comment on that.
Look,
who was it, Jim?
If we just went by experience, temperament, knowledge, ability to communicate, Natalie would be the governor. I mean, it's just that simple. Give me another resume.
We're biased.
My comment would be that LeVar Webb is a friend of mine. He says nice things about me.
I will just say, I wish the listeners could be in the studio and watch how uncomfortable Natalie is right now. See, Jim and I have
no problem.
I love
the state, but these things are complicated.
We have no problem talking about ourselves, but when you ask Natalie to talk about herself, it gets really awkward really quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of the governor, let's transition to the session a little bit. And
we'll let you have that.
We're going to have a state of the state soon. I'm hearing, rumor that
that's the only thing that can make Pelosi and Schumer look interesting. Watching the state of the state, give me a break. I've been to six of them. They are snoozers beyond words. But
I love them because I'm a speech writer is an avocation. An avocation to me. Just a hobby. I love words. But the governor foreshadowed something in his budget. He has $100 million for air quality in his budget.
Yeah.
Who knows what the legislature will do. But I think it's likely in the state of the state we will hear something big for air quality. I'll use a big term, a moonshot. But the question is, what should we use that $100 million for if you were to appropriate it? And I'll go to you first, Dan.
Yeah. Boy, this is tough because I know personally the largest cause of our air pollution is PM2.5s. And if you took $100 million and replaced all the cars that were older than 1995 on the roads with that $100 million, we could do a lot of good. And I'm talking about trucks. I'm talking about cars. So I'm not saying that's what we ought to do. But if we really wanted to make a difference,
interesting.
That's going to be the bigger difference.
Yeah, interesting. Jim, I don't know what's on your list, but I would like to see the state commit to a 10-year plan with specific milestones to hit and with some very, I'm going to actually call them air quality radical ideas to deal with this issue. And at the top of my list would be telework for public employees on red air days. And I mean this broadly. I don't mean just state government, but just for our listeners, I think state government has about 25,000 employees. I'm looking at Dan to see if he knows the number better.
I can't remember the number.
But it's big.
Yeah, it's a big
it's
number.
Big. If you add in the universities, if you add in cities and towns,
we're the largest
if you add
employer
in counties,
in
if you add in and obviously everyone can't telework, but you could have a plan that on red air days could dramatically drop transportation. If you remember during the games, the Olympic Games, we had a 25% reduction in VMT during the games by design.
Wow.
To make it work.
Yeah.
So anyway, that would be high on my list. Jim, what would be on your list to spend $100 million on for air quality?
Well, I mean, Dan has a point. There, we live in the mountains and we do have our unique set of problems, but we also get a significant amount of pollution from industrial causes, from buildings, from things escaping from buildings. There are ways
it's
we can do
10%.
It. If I was gonna take a bunch of money though, I would make UTA free. A UTA pass is very expensive for somebody who's making minimum wage. It is very expensive, and it makes up 12% of the total revenue for the UTA. Now, imagine what happens if we make it either free, or there may be some problems with that, but very, very, very reasonable, and make it available to almost everybody. Ridership goes up. We reward the people that are making the sacrifice to get off the streets. The highways get less congested. The hundreds of millions of dollars in not needed new roads. I mean, this is a win-win for everybody.
Interesting. Dan, I want to go to you. We only have 5 minutes left in the segment, and I think we ought to talk about the session for just a minute. So yeah. I hope that there's really productive, meaningful discussions about air quality. What else are we going to see this session?
Well, there's some crazy gun bills.
Okay, really?
There always is.
I know, but the fact that you would highlight that.
I'm just trying to think, like, what are the things that are always there, right?
Okay.
There's that. There's always some pro-industry thing that Jim's going to be really upset about. But tossing those things aside, if you want to focus on productivity, I think you're going to see meaningful change on the tax front. I am very optimistic with the governor putting his weight behind this for the last couple of years. It not being an election year, which means, you know, people are more willing to make aggressive mm-hmm. changes, especially the House. And so I think we're going to see some real substantial and positive measures in pushing our tax policy forward.
So that's, as Jim would say, a bunch of blah, 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 unless we throw out specifics. So I'm gonna fill in something here.
Okay,
I think what
ahead.
You're saying is that we have a tax structure that works in boom times, but when we come to hard times, we're going to struggle. So we got a structural problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to make some changes that give us revenue stability
mm-hmm.
through the cycles.
Well, and also revenue flexibility.
Revenue flexibility.
So that we have the ability to take care of long-term needs.
So the governor has proposed reducing the sales tax rate but broadening the base.
Yeah.
Do you think that has a chance?
It is going to be a big lift this late in the getting mm-hmm. ready for the session, right? But it's been talked about for years, and it's overdue. So
well,
I support the governor, and I think something
needs to
be done.
From a public policy perspective, and my area of expertise is public finance, that would be good for the state. Jim, your quick comment on tax reform or something else this session?
Tax reform, we need to go through the $800 or $900 million that we give away to corporations as incentives, some of them for 20 or 30 years. Nobody's looked at the incentives. We just give it away. That $80 million we just gave away to a certain manufacturers, there's a lot of money there, but it also is the best buds of the legislature and the governor. They fund their campaigns. So you get the Utah Manufacturers Association that gets $80 million, and guess who's right there near the top of campaign contributions? If there's one really dirty, miserable, swept under the carpet issue in state government, it is all the cheeky money that goes to corporations that have great lobbyists or big national names where a governor can come out and say, we've got Facebook, so we gave them $260
We're running
million
low on time,
dollars.
So I'm just gonna give Jim this. I'm not gonna say anything.
For the gripes?
Yeah.
Jim?
No, I'm going to gripe.
Oh, okay.
I'm not gonna gripe.
You're not going to front. Okay. Hey, we got to go to gripes. Jim, we'll go to you first. We've got about a minute and a half.
My gripe is that the year is turning out so well so far.
Easy for you to say, my friend. Dan, what's your gripe?
I was at a town hall this Saturday, and a gentleman after the town hall told me that I was the new Jim DeBacchus. I'm supposed to be rubbing off on Jim, not the other way around. So
That's a gripe. My gripe is people's hidden agendas. Jim mentioned that he thought Senator Lee was doing some things to get closer to Trump because he wants to be on the Supreme Court. I hear that people want to repeal SB 54 because they want to run for office.
Oh, brother.
There's always something behind the politician. I don't know I believe that, but that's always what political chatter says. I wish we could just all be real people doing real service to help this state prosper. So that's my gripe.
Amen, brother.
Doing the high five sign. Hey, just as we close out the session, Dan, real quickly, initiatives up on Capitol Hill, what are we going to see?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of work on the initiatives. That's all I can say right now. It's all the talk on Capitol Hill behind the scenes.
So that's something for our listeners to watch for. Crazy. Vote of the public, and then they're going
to
go fine-tune them.
Every law, every
Medicaid
year
expansion,
needs to be,
boundary.
Every law, every year needs to be visited.
Anybody that votes against the people's initiatives ought to be fired in the next election. That's what I say.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. The program is produced by Mr. Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.